Welcome once again, those of you still with us, or those of you joining for the first time. This is the Dan Time Podcast. I'm your host, Dan McArdle. What a joy and a privilege it's been to put on this production for you. I hope you're liking it. I get some feedback. It seems to tickle the fancy, scratch the itch for some of you. And what I do here is talk to people from the Daniverse. Now, please don't get this confused with the Manoverse. I'm not trying to compete head-on with that. So the Daniverse encompasses interesting people, good people, and impactful individuals who happen to be named Dan or Danny or Danielle. If you've been listening for a long time, you've seen some of the different variations come out. So it's a big umbrella, and the common theme is, like me, they're also named Dan or Danny. So doing some research, as I do frequently, I find guests in interesting ways, and it often starts with a Google search or something on social media. So Danny, I haven't revealed this to you today, and first of all, let me welcome my guest for episode number 70. This is leading LA-based publicist and PR executive, Danny Duraney. How's it going today, Danny?
It's going great, Dan. Nice to meet you and a privilege to be on your show.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you here. This is a big deal. Sometimes I'm thinking about, well, who's a guy named Dan or Danny who's attached to like a team that I like or a band or a musical artist or an actor? And I Googled Danny and Jimmy Buffett because I don't consider myself a parrot head, but he does something for a lot of people who are maybe primarily into another genre like I have been for a long time. Anyway, Danny, that's it. That's how I landed on you, is your tweet following the passing of legend Jimmy Buffett. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, well, shoot, this guy, I did a little more research and I thought he'd be an excellent guest.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I don't consider myself a parrot head either. I mean, I'm someone who has, Jimmy Buffett is in my, I guess, what do you say, Spotify now or your streaming service? I have Jimmy Buffett in my collection. I would never consider myself, not that there's anything wrong with considering yourself a parrot head, but I'm not someone who's going to follow. I don't know every word. I don't know the moves, outside of maybe doing the Fins thing.
Right.
It's not something, I wouldn't consider myself a hardcore fan. I'm an admirer for sure.
But it got me thinking, well, it led me to your social media pages and kind of what your professional career has been all about for the past two decades plus. And I started thinking, wow, Jimmy Buffett, maybe there was a crisis somewhere. Maybe he said the wrong thing sometime, but man, I don't remember it. How did this guy at that level, how did he not have a huge misstep? And I mean, he had a literal misstep one time. I think he had a fall during a concert.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's Jimmy Buffett is one of those artists who has transcended generations. It's almost to the fact of how did this guy stay relevant? You know, outside of really one song that everyone seems to know, can the common person who's just a music fan name more than one Jimmy Buffett song? You know, but here he is playing packed houses all over the world, and it's just one of those obsessions of our pop music, ocean music. I don't know what you would call Jimmy Buffett.
Golf and Western, I think, is what some people say he created that genre.
Right. So, you must really love the sea as a criteria, I guess. He was able to do it for, four decades, five decades? I can't do the math, but I think five decades.
Yeah.
And he did it consistently. And you know, he had his audience. He played to his audience. He never really changed his style. You know, I'm sure coral reefers have come and gone, but he never really, he played by his own rules. And that's one of the rock and roll outlaw characteristics that I always admire in artists.
So anyway, Danny is a more than just a crisis communications expert, but you've been named by the New York Observer as one of the top celebrity experts in this field. His knowledge has been sought on such networks as and organizations as NPR, CNN, SiriusXM, 60 Minutes. I found something interesting, and some of the biggest celebrities in culture, past clients being Taylor Swift, Justin Timberlake, Jay-Z, Beyonce, the list goes on. But I was watching a podcast, and I'll list these in the show notes. I don't remember which one exactly, where you said, I don't really go around and talk about this stuff. Like, it's such a big deal that I worked with this particular star. And it's, if people ask, okay, but I'm not, they're just regular people.
Yeah. Look, we are all people. We're all the same. Some people are put on TV where we see more of them. And I think because of that, you know, we hold them to a higher standard. I mean, you know, everybody eats, everybody takes a shower, everybody goes to the bathroom, whatever it is. It's like we all do the same things, except we're just not in the public eye. And, you know, I've never been starstruck. And I mean, I've been floored with the people I've got to work with who I was huge fans of, which were surreal. But that's surreal feeling leaves really quickly because, number one, I'm a professional, and you got to throw that feeling out the window. And that kind of happened also when I was younger and I was trying to, you know, still making my way through the industry and through my profession. But it was, I always look at it if I'm reversing it. Do I want all these people staring at me and into, you know, giving me whatever I want, or, you know, just not really talking to me because, you know, like on a one-on-one level, they're talking to me because I'm famous, or the way they're treating me, how they speak, how they're treating me, because of who I am. And I'm not one to gloat who I work with, or, I mean, it's because it's a job to do. It's, you know, whether I'm promoting an album, whether I'm promoting a series, whether I'm promoting a project, it's a job I need to do. If the artist wants to do something, that's fine, but that's not what I'm there for. You know, I'm not there to be best friends. I'm there to be, you know, to get the bottom line done.
Sure. Now, one other topic that I heard you touch on that I thought was really applicable to a lot of people in sticky situations they might get themselves in, mm-hmm. whether that's in their professional world or personal life, is harnessing time to your advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody knows when a major foreign policy catastrophe is going to happen. Mm-hmm. God forbid, you know, when 9/11 happened and some of the stories that got kind of swept away by that. Or if something's in the news and you maybe can recognize that, hey, this thing's about to blow up, why don't we just sit tight? Have you, mm-hmm. you've given some advice to your clients along those lines? Like, I know you want to rush out, you want to get in front of a microphone, you're pretty hot about this maybe, but let's just cool it for a minute.
There's the old adage of how time plus death equals fun, or death plus time equals funny. There's the old joke with that. But I mean, it's the same thing with in everything that we do. The adage that I give is, I don't know if it's an adage, but the example I give is, if you get into an argument or a fight with somebody, at that moment, you're so angry at them, you know, you don't know what kind of emotions are going to take you or where they're going to take you, what have you. The next day, you're not as angry. The following day, you're not as angry. You might still not like the person or whatever the situation, but the feelings of anger, resentment are not as much as they were the moment that everything happened. And I think that's important because I think if there's something that is going to blow up that's going to cause that kind of feeling, it's better to be on a level head and not let your emotions take you to where they could, to an unfortunate level or to a level that you're going to regret. Not that it's going to be unfortunate or regretful, but somewhere that your mind will take you or your emotions will take you. And it's very important to do that, I think, in any aspect of any profession, because just one wrong move in the public eye, you know, there's more work that's going to need to be done, whether it's an image for a person, a company, corporation. One wrong thing is just more work to add into the level of people understanding, forgiving, whatever the situation may be.
I also heard you describe where your clients will come to you because, or mostly because, somebody is doing harm or is trying to do some harm to them, and they want to come out and defend their honor and their character. Mm-hmm. That's probably naturally very hard for people to wait. Do you ever have clients that have a hard time taking your advice and don't see the immediate value?
You know, as the job of a publicist, I mean, you can only do what you can do. You know, you're paying me for my advice, for what I've seen before, for the examples where I've learned dealing with others, another set of eyes. You know, it's you hope that, you know, when clients, you know, come to you, you know, they're asking. I mean, really the bottom line is the situation is always different, whether some news is going to come out about them, whether someone is accusing them of something, whether something has happened to them and they want to come out with the news regarding that, where they're trying to defend their honor. Every situation is always different. And again, it goes back to the time. It's like, what can you use around you? Does this have to happen right now, right now? How can we better plan for this news that's going to come out? Or how do we protect ourselves? What is going to be said about you? Or if something is already said, like, how can we plan? And I think that's always what it comes back to, is timing. Because you don't owe anybody a response to anything. You don't owe anybody, even yourself, a response, quite frankly. But if anything, you know, for yourself, or, you know, if it's protecting your family, that's, you know, that's one thing. But you don't owe anybody a response right away. Even if your fans are asking, the news are asking, I'm in a situation right now where, you know, every day by the press, I'm being asked about somebody for an interview. And it's like, no, you know, it's like, I don't have to give it to you. I don't, you know, it's, we'll be, when we're ready to talk, we'll talk. You know, when this person's ready and feels comfortable, they're going to talk. You know, until then, just leave it be.
And might revisit this topic as well. But I know you've talked about it ad nauseum. I want to highlight some other campaigns that you've been a part of: the Me Too movement, mm-hmm. equal rights, elder abuse. Can you talk about that and how you got involved and how those issues are important to you as well?
You know, it's with, you never know where your career is going to take you, or the situations that you are somehow meeting somebody, you know, and they ask for your help or assistance in something, how it's going to kind of change your career. You know, elder abuse, like, why would that even be on my radar for anything? And what happened was I was dealing with, I befriended the child of Casey Kasem, the famous radio disc jockey. My cousin, Don Bustani, co-created the show America's Top 40 with Casey. And I befriended Carrie Kasem on Twitter, saying, hey, my name is Danny. Your dad and my cousin were best friends. I just thought I'd say hi. And you know, she direct messaged me, like, we should talk, blah, 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 blah. And I had no idea what was going on with their father. No clue. She just called me up and said, oh, I have this event that I might want to work on, you to work on in October. It's like some motorcycles for charity event. I'm like, okay, sure. Call me then. And this is in the spring. It's not even summer yet. And oh, cool, that's fine. And then my wife, the next day, I told my wife about this conversation, you know, how we had so much in common and so forth. And then my wife the next day, she's like, oh my gosh, did you see this? And that's when Casey Kasem, who at the time was suffering from Lewy body dementia, he was living in a Santa Monica care facility, was taken from all his meds, all his bed by his wife, and basically just took him from there without anyone's knowledge and just ran the country with him, I think in a van, I could be wrong. And nobody knew where he was. And I said, holy crap, no, I had no idea. It's like she's been sitting on this thing for whatever, and she didn't tell me. And I remember I told her, like, Carrie, you know, do you need my help? I do crisis communication. That's part of my job. Do you need my help? She's like, oh my gosh, it's just so crazy right now. I go, Carrie, do you need my help? And, you know, she was really didn't know what to do. I think she just felt really overwhelmed. And she's, you know, saying, oh, it's so busy or whatever. I go, Carrie, do you need my help? Yes or no? She's like, oh, okay, what do we do? I go, you're going to turn off your phone. You're going to make your voicemail. Just say, if you need to contact me regarding my father, contact Danny Duraney. This is his number. And through I think the next couple months, I mean, throughout that year, I forget what year that was, maybe 2014.
Yeah, about 10 years ago.
Yeah, could we just have the 10-year anniversary? That's right. Throughout that time, it was just crazy. I mean, it was like one of the top national news stories for at least 2 months. And we were just constantly, trying to promote the good because, Casey's wife was doing the opposite. And it was just a really, really messy time. And because of that, because of the elder abuse accusations and everything that went along with it, Carrie would relate to me like, hey, look, there's things that are going on with Mickey Rooney. There's something going on with Glenn Campbell. There's all, and we started working with these people, some for a while, some not too long. And, a lot of the things I turned down because I didn't see some of these things were true. But it just turned out like for the next couple of years, people who were dealing with elder were contacting me. Like I became the elder abuse guy. Like how does that happen? Like it's not on your radar and all of a sudden, people are contacting, like help. Like, so, I mean, eventually it led to the situation with Star Trek's Nichelle Nichols and all these other folks and even people who aren't celebrities, just parents or a lot of these kids whose new step parents is taking over and doing similar things that Carrie's father was dealing with. So it's just really weird how that comes through. As far as the Me Too movement, these are things that you always heard in the rumblings of, working in this industry, like this person's bad, that person's bad, stay away from this person ruined my career. So it was one of those things where for me, being a publicist, I worked on a lot of, even before I had daughters, I worked on a lot of female oriented campaigns. I've always fought for not just women's rights, but really the person who's not being heard the most, whether it's a minority, whether it's, the disability community, or I've always had a passion for those kind of voices. And I started doing a lot of work with these, like the ERA, for instance. They would come to me because they knew my work, dealing with that. And I think with the Me Too movement came, a lot of people were familiar with my work. So they were coming to me saying, hey, Harvey Weinstein did this to me. So-and-so did that to me. And not just women, men too, would come to me. And again, it also comes down to doing your research, and finding out, did this really happen? Are you making more of it than what it really is? A lot of it is, you need to do your homework on these situations. But again, it's like, it's the work that you've done. And then people coming to you later saying, hey, I know you did this. Can you help me with something similar? And that's how that happened. I've never gone to anyone in the Me Too movement and said, hey, look, I would love to work with you, on this. No, I won't do that. I mean, I'll speak up for you, but I'm not going to go and use them and say, hey, look, this is my forte. Give me your money and let's do. No, I've never done that. And I refuse to, to do anything like that.
But you were one of the first to speak out on Harvey Weinstein. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
I think I was, I would not say I was the first, but I was definitely one of the first men to do that because I knew a lot of people who had these stories, people I trust, and these accusations turned out to be true. Over time we learned a lot about it, but yeah, I absolutely was. I don't consider myself the first at all, but I was, I know people have said that about me. I wouldn't rank it or whatever, but I was very proud of that. I was very proud to step up and say, look, there are predators everywhere. This is what this guy's done. He's done it, to one of my clients, and there's other people that are out there like him, and these people should be brought to justice.
Seems like there was a long period of time, certainly through the 70s and 80s and the decades before, where women didn't have a lot of representation against men like...
None.
Like Harvey or...
None. I mean, did good people exist? Absolutely. But I think women and men too, were taken advantage of during these periods because, the Hollywood casting couch is not a BS story. I mean, it existed. It's existed, before your grandfather was born. So it's
I don't usually insert a lot of commentary, but it is sad that in a woman's case, you have to have like multiple accusations against one high profile, maybe beloved male figure to really start to just chip away a little bit at his character and open up some questioning. Like it can't just be one. Certainly can't be one in many cases, or even four. You always hear like now dozens of women have come out. You read that in a news report.
It is a shame, but I mean, because it's true. And I remember, you know, one of my clients, it wasn't Harvey Weinstein, it was another gentleman who wanted to say something, but she was afraid to say something. And it wasn't until she heard that Ronan Farrow was coming out with an article on somebody, and he asked me or her, I forget who he asked first, what do you know about so-and-so? And then that's when she decided to tell her story, because she didn't want to come out on her own because she didn't think anyone would believe her. I mean, look how many people came out against Harvey. Look how many people came out against Bill Cosby. You know, people want to hold, I wouldn't call Harvey Weinstein a hero in any aspect, but, you know, someone like Bill Cosby, who, you know, was, you know, dubbed America's father, you know, throughout the 80s. And, you know, one is the most legendary, and I'll say it, you know, even though what he did was terrible, one of the most brilliant comedians of our lifetime. And it's sad that we can't enjoy that anymore. But you don't want to hear those things. You don't want to believe those things about some people. And so if someone's going to come out, and look, there are a lot of people that are out there, and I've witnessed it myself, who have been accused wrongly. You know, I've met people, like there's one person, I won't mention the celebrity, that they were accused of harassment. You know, and then it turns out that, you know, it was a bad breakup. He didn't want to be with her anymore. She came to me to bring this person down. And I go, so it's a harassment. So he was trying to date you and do all these things. You know, yeah, it happened. You know, he was just terrible. And then it turns out they had a relationship. She was sending him naked photos of him and of her to him, telling me of all these things that she, and it's finally come to light, she did all these things. So it was consensual. She said, yeah. I go, so how's that harassment? And so I stopped talking to her. It's like, so there's a lot of people, and there's bad people on both sides, you know, where they're trying to basically bring someone down because they got their feelings hurt because he said no. And it's unfortunate that, you know, those people exist too.
And you probably saw, like you said, you see all angles of it.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody may have had a more or less a tryst with somebody, or a 5-week relationship, and
they were no longer interested. And then it's like, you know, you turn around and say, wait, so you want me to bring them down? And I go, do you see what you're doing to him? Who's harassing who? Who's causing trouble now? Because this person didn't want to go out with you anymore. You know, and there's a lot of things where it's, you know, where you saw people going out on dates, the date tried to go a little far. The person said, okay, fine, I'm not going to do anything else. And then, oh, let me write a magazine article about it. My time with this celebrity where he tried to do this to me. You know, it's just like, well, no, I mean, that's not what happened. You know, so it's unfortunate that, you know, that some of these people's names are being wrung through the mud when they shouldn't be. But the people who should be getting in trouble are getting in trouble.
Now, shifting gears a little bit, your background, I didn't have an exactly similar background, but KPIX, CBS mm-hmm. affiliate, an intern in the sports department.
Mm-hmm.
I've had some episodes with people in my network where we worked at a newspaper in the sports department many years ago. Such a great time in mm-hmm. in our lives. I want to get your opinion with the World Series starting tomorrow night, Yankees Dodgers. I mean, if you're a baseball fan, and you're a Rangers fan, or you're a Blue Jays fan. I'm a Cubs fan, and I'm thinking this is a dream matchup. Something like 40 years since the last.
Years.
Yeah. Real quick, I want to talk about the World Series, but going back to like the Balco scandal, early 2000s, and some of those guys where you have reputations that are kind of repaired now in 2024, mm-hmm. and then you've got some reputations that are still the same as they were back then. Like you got A-Rod is on a pregame panel doing a pretty good job. I love listening to A-Rod. And you got somebody like Rafael Palmeiro, who's kind of way back here in the past. And it was like, do you think some of the messaging with those guys that they could have done a better job? How would you have approached that if, you know, if some of those ball players, you're representing some of those players back then?
You know, in A-Rod's case, if he didn't get caught, who knows what he would have done? You know, I mean, like how he'd be approached, how he'd be speaking about not only himself, but, you know, speaking about others who've used, who knows how. I think A-Rod's a very sensitive individual. You know, I know he loves the game of baseball. You know, I remember when he went and took the big money. I mean, when he took the big money to go to Texas, and the All-Star game the following year was in Seattle, and they were booing him while he's being interviewed. You can see him get emotional, like, you know, like it really hurt him when he saw that. But again, I think A-Rod's different. I think, first of all, you know, besides being a hell of a ball player, I think most people resent A-Rod, which is now laughable because of the contract that he signed with Texas, which at the time was just like, what, $200 million?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Now we're, you know, Shohei Ohtani's $700, you know, Mike Trout's making $400, $500, whatever it is. You know, now it's like nothing. Now it's expected that any starting reliever on the market right in the offseason, if they're a good quality pitcher at the age of 30, they're going to make $150 million over 5 years easily. And, you know, so I think a lot of that had going on for them. But I think the fact that he got caught actually helped him in the process of some sort of redemption. The difference is that people like Mark McGwire, people like Rafael Palmeiro. Well, Mark McGwire admitted it, but admitted it late, something we all knew what was happening. And, you know, whereas he owned up to it, where someone like Rafael Palmeiro, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, none of these people have showed any form of contrition or owning up to anything that they've done. And I think the public resents that. And again, what it comes down to is, when you are in the public eye, in this case, steroids, if you get caught doing something or you've done something bad, the public is more forgiving, and we're a pretty forgiving nation. The public is more forgiving if you own up to something. An example, you know, and I'm going to date myself here, when, you know, Hugh Grant got in trouble with the prostitute, a day or two later, he went on the Tonight Show and owned up to it, was completely embarrassed. And I think he's been nominated for an Oscar since then. You know, he's making movies still. We still love him and things. Kristen Stewart. Kristen Stewart broke up a marriage with somebody. She apologized. She owned up to it. We still see her in things. You know, once we start forgiving, once we start seeing what we did wrong and analyze that we've messed up, and we can say so that we've messed up, it's so much easier to continue moving forward rather than just hiding it in, fighting it and fighting it and fighting it, which I know a lot of these athletes do. I think getting caught gives you that option for later on to be forgiven. If you're going to be a jerk about it or you know, hold your nose up to any accusations, even though we know you did, you know, chances are it's not going to happen. Is Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens going to get into the Hall of Fame? Maybe not in my lifetime, I don't think. They could happen, but not at least not into the current baseball writers, this generation of writers will no way in heck let a steroid user in. But again, if you've owned up to some of the problems that you've had, I think it would be a lot easier for them to get accepted back into the conversation.
Hugh Grant, I'm remembering now, it was like a case study in how to do this.
Right. He walked in there. I think Jay Leno asked him, what the F were you thinking? And he just like sunk in his chair and just shook his head, and just everyone was laughing at him. I mean, he got cojones to go on the biggest show in the country and basically admit that he messed up. And he hasn't looked back since. Has not looked back since.
Have you ever met with celebrities and you start taking notes, or you notice things about their personality style, and you think, look, I know we can beat back on this because you're likable. You can show remorse, or do you ever meet people and you're like, wow, this is going to be tough because he's pretty icy, and I don't think he's contrite, and I don't know going on TV if he's going to look too hot either.
It really depends on what's happening with that person. When it comes to crisis communications, I mean, I get a lot of different situations, and it's so important for you as a publicist, as a PR pro, and not just my profession, any profession, and also yourself. You have to remember, and I hate even saying this term, but you are your own brand, okay? You are going to, look, 100 years from now, no one's going to remember us. You know, while we're here, they are going to remember us. And you've got to take care of yourself and take care, you know, of your own business to make sure that what you're getting involved with is the right decision. So anytime I am given or someone comes to me, you know, needing my help in that regard, I will do research on them, or I will ask for any kind of proof that shows me that that's the case, that okay, I have to believe you, that I want to fight for you. And I've got to see proof, not that the proof that you provide me, but I'm going to, you know, I got to do my own research, read news stories. If they know someone else, maybe contact another person and find out, you know, what that person's all about, you know. And you don't have to agree with me politically. You don't have to agree with me socially. We don't have to be best friends. I got to know that you're just a legit human being who's messed up or did not mess up, and you're fighting for yourself. And here's, you know, with the following reasons why. That to me is the most important thing. So it's hard really to pinpoint, but when it comes down to is making sure that if someone's going to come to me and they want some kind of mess cleaned up, you've got to make sure that you're doing your own work, and you got to make sure that, you know, that person or whoever is who they say they are.
Switching gears again here, I want to touch on this. Pretty exciting with the World Series coming up, and I know you called out. Well, let me back up a little bit. So this was a fun story that you told, and I don't want you to rehash the whole thing, but growing up, you thought you were French, and turns out you're Armenian, Lebanese, and Italian.
Right.
We've got a couple, and I know you, I think on an X post, you're celebrating a couple Arab Americans,
mm-hmm.
Lauren Jabara and Lauren Shahadi.
Yeah.
Who both do an excellent job.
Both really excellent.
I love Lauren Jabara's joy. It just comes across naturally. She's just excited to be there. She's magnetic. Couple ways I want to come at this. How excited are you to see figures in sports where we're moving past just, okay, here's the first female, here's the first Indian American, but we're kind of shattering all of those barriers.
It's wonderful. You know, I mean, look, it's not just two Arabs, it's two Arab women. And it's beautiful. It's wonderful to see people getting great jobs that deserve it. People that may not look like you out there reporting the news. It's just a beautiful thing. I mean, growing up, like the only Arab on television was Danny Thomas, and that was reruns. You know, it was of whatever, you know, whatever show he was on. I mean, that's the 1950s and 60s. It's way before my time. So, I mean, not crazy before my time, but, you know, you just don't see it. You just never saw it. So, I mean, just to see two, you know, one, let alone two people out there, I mean, that just, you know, that warms the heartstrings. It's just like, it's such a wonderful thing to see the people that who don't always look like you or the people that you associate with, you know, getting gigs like that. I love it.
One of the great joys of fatherhood, and we were talking earlier about our children,
mm-hmm.
is taking your kids places, getting them outside of your own backyard, whatever city you live in, or if you live outside of a metro area, there's places you can go, different playgrounds you can go to. You don't always go to the same spot. And one of the special joys I have as a father is taking my young children places where I know it's going to be a mixed bag. Like they're, mm-hmm. and it's important for me to have them in a early learning center where it's sure. not a bunch of white kids. Like it's just the little things that you can do to foster those interactions and friendships.
Absolutely.
And so
absolutely, you know,
because when we were growing up, it was like, especially in TV and culture, If you were a different nationality, it was almost like you were caricatured. I remember growing up watching pro wrestling in the 80s, and it was like every stereotype you can imagine was they created a character.
What? You mean Nikolai Volkov wasn't really Russian? You're kidding me. it's funny. I actually did a college paper on that once about how, and this was in the 90s, about how if there's a foreigner on television, he's usually some kind of caricature or a joke.
Or it's the bad guy.
Or the bad guy, yes. I used to tease my friend Jason, who like three of his first jobs, he's an actor, and three of his first jobs were playing cab driver. So, what I love, I always had a special place in my heart for the TV I grew up with. I loved, and I didn't understand it, because to me, they were just people, I know that sounds completely ridiculous, but, I didn't think when I was, I loved Norman Lear sitcoms, okay, love them. I loved Good Times. I love Sanford and Son and the Jeffersons, and I just thought it was a normal family living, somewhere, or, obviously, not everyone's a junk dealer, but, it was just normal, but it was just normal situations with people. And, Sesame Street, what taught me more about Spanish and Black culture than Sesame Street? It was just the songs I still sing today, or the words to the short stories that I still remember to this day. I was just fascinated by it the same way I'd be fascinated by anything else. I think we were, for our age, Gen X culture, it was the perfect time of acceptance. Here I am watching Sesame Street or these Norman Lear shows, where 10 years earlier, there wouldn't be 3, 4, 5 shows with the entire Black cast. That's crazy to think that. And in the 70s, and well up, obviously as we moved along, it was... you're a kid. You're not going to be shocked by saying something or offended by saying something. You just think it's an everyday thing. Racism is learned, by others, by listening to people, whether they're using terrible words to describe people or calling them names or any kind of inferiority complex somebody might have, or superiority complex, that I guess. You don't know these things. You just think these are just everyday people doing whatever. In preschool, my two best friends in preschool were two Black twins. It's like, I didn't care. They were the funnest people to hang out with. You don't know any better, unless someone says something to you. That's how you're going to learn that stuff. And hopefully not take part. It's just refreshing, I think, in this day and age to go back, obviously to baseball, just to see, some people who are underrepresented, which I think the Arab community is. But it's just refreshing to see two people in a hosting gig or a field reporter, whatever they're doing, just get that respect and get the job that they deserve.
All right. I appreciate you listening to the Dan Time Podcast. My conversation with Danny Duraney wraps up this week. Look for part two. Be sure to subscribe to the Dan Time Podcast on your favorite platform. You can also follow the show on social media, Instagram, Facebook, X, and YouTube. And if you got a question or a guest recommendation for the show, dantimepod@gmail.com. Thanks and have a great week.